recall that the last committee meeting was held on the 16th March, and in this meeting, the committee could not finish all its business, and the issues that could not be addressed have been carried over. So the purpose of our meeting today is to finalize the outstanding matters as well as the new matters that were raised. The committee will also look into the program of its planned strategic workshop just as information for tomorrow. And so give members the opportunity how the day will be like tomorrow. So we'll allow the Secretary of Parliament to respond to issues raised between the period that is stated. So for today, we'll use in our file members, slightly I think it's item 3, more under item 3, there's a documentation. So we propose that we adopt the minutes tomorrow. Rather than dealing with the minutes now, we have lost an hour. And members have received the documentation quite on time, and I believe that we have gone through the document. So we'll ask the Secretary to, when he reports, where possible, not to go in much more greater detail, but to really cover issues as they are on the report, so members can really refer to the report. Just the normal formalities. I would like members to adopt the agenda as it is, and then the apologies. Can you just indicate who is not in this meeting?
Apologies from Mr. Kayla and from Ms.
Botana. Other members will join us. Okay. Yes, Honorable Imam.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's been a religious night for us. Some of us may be in a ceremony for a special prayer.
Okay, thanks. For us, apologies. Okay. Okay, that's no good. Okay. So we know the apologies. I think that members may be clearly. So if possible, I think that the Secretary suggests that we cover aspects some of these things much more, maybe in brief, but we can further to cover important aspects that you want to cover in the report. So shall we proceed, members, that I invite the Secretary to speak as to co-chair?
Thank you very much, co-chair, and good evening, honorable members. We have provided to the committee the responses to the questions that were raised. And we note the committee's guidance on the areas that we must touch on. The first one being the recommendations that were made by the committee on the Parliament's annual report for 2015-2016. And the ATSA findings 2015-16. If we go through the report, that would be on page 4 of the report, moving on to page 5 of the report. The committee will recall that the findings of the Auditor General for the year in question was that they gave Parliament what is commonly referred to as the clean audit with no material findings. Secondly, the Auditor General always also issues what is referred to as the management letter. The management letter is a letter that identify a number of issues that must be dealt with by management. And of course, if those issues are not dealt with, they may amount to material
matters,
which
then are provided in that document.
The bulk of those issues identified by the committee, by the AGSA, related to issues also that the committee has made.
They don't have answers.
Making sure that we continue on our path of relooking at the way we articulate our targets. Because we have indicated that we have moved to an outcome-based system, meaning that we are going to then look at reformulating our targets so that we don't refer to them in the context of the outputs. Secondly, looking at collecting and collating the data and verifying, which is a process that AGSA is interested in, because that would then ensure whether we can prove the rest that we say we have done, the LTMs, and the rest that needed to be done then at the branch level. Improving the descriptors, the indicators of the descriptors, assurance certificates, which basically is proof that things have been done at line management level. And also then ensuring that the strategic management governance division coordinates work. So we have put in place some work that relates to then those aspects through the strategic management and governance division, which made sure that the way we do our planning, there's an improvement in the way we do the tracking. And in that regard, we're looking at the financial year 2017-18. So the committee, when it dealt with the ATP for 2017-18, it would have then reflected on the findings that would have been made by the Auditor General of saying how do we improve on the way in which we refer to the tax. Secondly, we did put in place a system. We have a draft policy framework that we have attached, as part of the submissions to the committee, that details the overall planning, implementation, life management, and reporting aspects of our work. That work we then had to buttress with the verification that has to be done by the HAT audit. The internal audit, which gives an assurance on the side of the secretary and through the audit committee on whether we are addressing the issues that are identified by the AG, and of course would then become the subject of assessment by the internal audit, meaning the AGSA, who would then give an opinion on whether that report would be in line. So that is work that we would have done then for 2017-18 APP, which then looks at the work that we have done. Now, the same issue, co-chairs, would then go to the question of clarifying smart targets. The committee would recall that the key issues that we were looking at here was the same on indicating whether the targets that were put forward, they would comply with your SMART criteria. We had indicated when we made representations to the committee that this was work in progress, and we are improving on that year on year as we do our planning. So we have done effected some of those changes for the financial year 2017-18. And most certainly, when we are doing our planning for 2018-19, which we're currently busy with, we have taken those aspects also on board on trying to improve the way in which we articulate our targets in that regard. And once again, that process is also verified by internal audit, which would then say give a particular view to the AGSA, to the audit committee, and of course the AGSA would also express itself in that regard. The performance management policy, we have attached that policy, the current existing policy, and we are also noting that we are in the process as the administration working on reviewing some of the HR policies broadly. And part of that would include the policy on performance management, that we have attached the policy that is in play now. I'm now on page 5 thereof, chapters. Then, Chairperson, I will skip the aspect for now.
Page 5 of what?
The document.
Okay.
Okay.
The report on implementation of recommendation of the strength study college.
Yeah.
That's the report. All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Then there was a question that was raised on what we think are the reasons for labor to refuse to participate in the performance management system. And I think basically the Chairperson, what we are saying is we've been engaged in labor in this regard. We can't speak on their behalf per se, but we have been engaged in labor in this regard. And the latest, as of the report that I received yesterday, is that labor has indicated that it will participate in the performance management system within the institution, which would basically mean that this issue would no longer be an issue. Then on strengthening the records of management control, this was also related to the same question on the target management of evidence, the reporting thereto, and making sure that we have means of verification. So that is dealt with through the policy and application that we coordinated through strategic management division. Centralizing of the supply chain management. The supply chain management, as reported before in the previous meeting, within the institution was dispersed to various divisions and sometimes sections. That created its own challenges because in terms of your modern management principles, you need to be able to ensure that the full compliance with the actions that need to be done. Secondly, you need to be able to apply the full principles of SCM around sourcing of supply, making sure that when you source the supply, you're able to also gain from the benefits of the economies of scale, and they are able then to manage the contract properly. Like for instance, you don't have a myriad of contracts from the same institution with one service provider on their phone. Right? You have the institution have contract with that cell phone provider on favorable terms to the institution, and then the product and the services provided to the institution. And when there are challenges, then you're able to manage those challenges. In the past, all of those would be dispersed to the various divisions and various offices, and they would manage those type of contracts individually, which is inefficient in terms of management. So I commissioned the CFO, who is responsible for supply chain management, to make sure that we're able to organize ourselves properly there and are able to provide a service that is appropriate in this regard, as contemplated in terms of the FMCPLA, which requires that I make sure that there's efficient use of resources within the industry. So that would be the issue around consolidating on the supply chain management. And that process is ongoing. The CFO has given me the proposal. We are looking at ways of implementing that proposal, which will include, amongst other issues, better management of travel services, better management of the way we organize airlines, hotels, and various other service providers that we engage with. Currently, there's individual arrangements, as I was saying. Those arrangements, they tell me that we can't take full advantage of the services that the services and products that are offered by the supply. So that would be it around the centralization of the supply chain management. And of course, this has to work in very well with, if I can add this, it has to work in very well with your enterprise resource management system, meaning your ERP system. Because once you have that, then they're able then to trace and track the processes very nicely in the system. Currently, of course, as you would know, we have Oracle that we're using in that space. And then on 1.9, consolidating reporting guidelines and templates. Indeed, this is done in terms of the quality that we have attached. And basically, the strategic management division is working on making sure that there's consolidation in that regard, including, where necessary, training the relevant line managers where their capacity gets. We have reinforced that particular space also with the capacity that we're able to reassign within the institution, which basically means that at this point in time, we think we are moving in the right direction. We are in a better state than we used to be. The kind of reports, the kinds of plans that we are putting forward, which is where things start, are also improving, and therefore, consequentially, we're able to get better reports, and those reports were able to make the necessary interventions that need to be made in that regard. On the process followed to condone irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, what was reported to this committee was that we were going to establish a committee that deals with going through each and every possible irregular, in fact, on irregular and fruitless expenditure. That committee has been established. If you look at page 6, those with the members of that particular committee, they have been able to do work in this regard. Members of the committee will recall that there were quite a lot of things that were outstanding from the previous financial year on matters that were not processed, meaning condoned or further action taken by the secretary. So in this regard, they have been able to go through quite substantive work in this regard, where they have made proposals, and in making those proposals, the way they do it is that there will be an issue of irregular expenditure. They will call the relevant line manager to explain what has happened, why it has happened, could it have been avoided, what are the possible other actions that could have been done, what has been done, is it because of negligence, or the institution benefited from that particular action. Go through a series, basically, of checklists and actions. And then once they've blanket extermination that says, yes, indeed, the actions were not followed properly, as it were, but the institution benefited, and as a result, we are recommending that the Secretary condones this particular action. Or we could make a recommendation that says, clearly, there was negligence here, and where there is negligence, therefore, the institution needs to take appropriate action in that regard. So they have made specific recommendations, which most of them has been on condemnation. But we have also taken further steps in that regard, that for the line managers that did not follow the due process in that just to these members that we have explained before on some of the issues, that the work that is done by Parliament through its committees, sometimes you find that we work in digital spaces if we have to get transport to do our work. In some places, we have to go and get whatever transport services that are available. So that we can get members of the public to attend the committee. So when we have to do that, you may not have all the necessary papers, you may not have the tax clearance papers and all those other papers that are required at that time to embark on that particular action. But because the staff members will be trying to service the committee and what it has to do, they may then, at that point in time, decide that will then assist those members of the public so that they can come and attend a committee meeting. So on the face of it, the action benefits the institution in that regard. But if you look at the procedure would not necessarily have been followed to the team up front before that particular action was taken. But we have indicated and put in place measures on all of these issues, including that one, to say there should be measures that are put in place when that happens of communication by the relevant staff members with the relevant line managers, getting the appropriate approvals, and some of those approvals could be through you know, email, SMS, all those other forms of communication, which would enable then the appropriate authorization to take place. So where that has not happened, some of those staff members have been given basically warnings to say, look, next time let's try and do things differently. Your heart may have been in the right place, but in terms of procedure, you know, we may not have followed the procedure in the right manner. And this is what needed to have been done if you follow the procedure accordingly. And when you come back to base, you come back to Parliament, you can then, these are the steps that you need to do so that we can regularize that action that has been taken. So we have taken those particular steps basically in order to make sure that the irregular and fruitless expenditure that has been identified is condoned. And then you go to page 8, which the committee requested basically for us to provide an indication on the travel expenditure for both local and international, and the first one, which is the local travel, and of course the local travel, because most of the work of committees, the work of Parliament, happen locally. And then you would have the cumulative figure there is about 190, and out of that 190, 157 thereof was spent on members, and it makes sense, and 33 was spent for staff. And why 157? Of course, we are talking about members of Parliament who are going to do their duties, and when they go and do their duties, they must be supported by the administration in that regard. And we have the same kind of percentage, same kind of allocation for your international travel, which you have over 13 million that has been expended as of March 2017 for members, and the support staff, about 5 million, who are support staff, of course, supporting the delegation in that regard. Then the breakdown for all critical vacants. We have given on page 9, Honorable Co-Chairs and Honorable Members, basically the a breakdown of the posts that are related to the corporate area, which is about 30 posts that have been identified, the time at which they have been vacant, The progress in terms of those posts is at different levels and basically varies according. Meaning, some of the posts are in the process where we have done shortlisting, and in some instances there are offers that have been made. Like for instance, the first three posts in the shortlisting space, 4 and 5, are at the stage where we have given the offer, meaning we are waiting the candidates to respond. On 6, we would have had approval in that regard. 7 would have been advertising, meaning, honorable members, basically all of this would be dealt with on case by case, working with the relevant administrators in this regard, working with the relevant committees, you know, in order to make sure that basically we fill this particular post as soon as possible. On our side, what we have said, what we have prioritized and have reported in this particular meeting is, you recall that we had indicated that there were about 60 positions that remain vacant. Out of those 60 positions, what the directive that I've given to human resources in this regard is that we prioritize the filling of the vacancies of in the core business space, given you know, the fact that that would be the priority for our committees and would be the priority for the work of the House. Then there's the information that was requested on the 20 years of celebration of the Constitution and the NCOP. I think the key issue to mention here, honorable members, through you, co-chairs, is that this is both a thematic area, a theme for the year, for Parliament, and there are specific projects within there. Meaning, everything that we do, we then do it in the context of the celebration of the Constitution. And basically the establishment of the NCOP. In that respect, means when we would be looking at SONA, we would be saying, how does SONA relate to that particular thing? So when we talk about the budget, in that respect, which comes closer to the question that the committee has asked, we'll be looking at existing plans that are there and how we leverage those plans within the context of the theme that has been chosen. In terms of the specific activity that happened as a standalone on its own, the members of the committee would recall that we had an event that we held in the chamber. That event was a specific event to celebrate our constitution and to celebrate the establishment of the NCOP. And the core thing there too, in terms of what has happened, is that we expended $2 million, $2.4 million, if I round off that particular figure, as given, as provided there in the report, which included a number of activities, the film that we had, the exhibition that we are doing in Parliament together with the provincial legislature, the provincial promotional material and the featuring that we had to embark on, printing, and of course traveling for quite a number of the honored guests that we had invited as Parliament. So that would be the expenditure that is very specific to this particular activity. But as I'm indicating, as we'll be celebrating the Youth Parliament, taking the dimension once again, that says we must do so within the context of the 20-year celebration project. When we'll be doing the Women's Month celebration, we'll also be doing it in that context. So all of our activities that we have originally planned for, we're going to put them in the context of this thing. So it's not like there's over and above what I indicated. There's additional things that we have planned. If there are, I think they will be considered on a case-by-case basis. But based on the plans that are there now, this is what we have in terms of this particular project. Well, the details in terms of the employees are suspended, and of course employees are suspended based on a variety of reasons. And at this point in time, for Parliament, we have only one employee that is suspended, and that case, as far as I know, it's a matter now, in fact, it's a matter that has always been handled between the legal representatives of that staff member and the legal representatives of Parliament. And they are engaged in a process that is also managed and mediated by an independent chairperson, meaning it's not staff members at this level. And I know that the parties are engaging also at different levels in order to make sure that this particular matter is resolved as speedily as possible. But at this stage, there is no resolution on that matter. It's still a pending matter. So we have one staff member in this regard that is suspended. Then for 2.3, a detailed breakdown of the Office of the Speaker. Honorable Chairperson, I have requested in this regard, I don't know whether we have co-chairpersons, I have requested in this regard to give you a supplementary page that just focuses on this, because what you have there is less 20 staff members. What we have here is about 43 staff members. The 20 staff members relate specifically to the staff members that are in the Office of the Speaker, but the Office of the Speaker is broad, right? It consists of the Office of the Deputy Speaker. It consists of the offices of the House Chairperson. The Office of the Institute Supporting Democracy also is in that particular office. So what we have excluded here, which I have requested that for the benefit of the committee, we provide, and we apologize for that, we provide, is to indicate this broad office that is there. So what we have there basically is about 43 staff members who are at various levels in support of the Office of the Speaker, the Deputy Speaker, the House Chairs. Of course, for the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker, we are also guided by the Ministerial Handbook, which indicates the type of support that must be provided to a creative authority and the Deputy, which is the Deputy Speaker. And of course, for House Chairpersons, though they are not covered in the Ministerial Handbook, it means that the support that Parliament provides to the House Chairperson. And you have the Office of Institute Supporting Democracy. The Honorable Members would recall that came about immediately after the adoption of the Kari Asma report, which basically said Parliament needs to pay dedicated attention to supporting the institution, supporting democracy. So we have indicated the figures there. And of course, this Honorable Co-Chairpersons and Honorable Members needs to be read with the information that we have already provided to the committee. Recall that the committee requested that we provide information on the Obaga, which we provided some time ago. I think it was a meeting earlier on this year where we were requested to provide information on the organogram of the entire institution, which then includes the Office of the Speaker and Office of the Chair. Now for 2.7, which now deals with before I go there, I think there are about two or three issues. The enterprise resource management system. We have given the members of the committee. Let me just go through, I mean, on the basis of the report that is there, because I will now move from one document to another, so that maybe we can go back to page 13, one report on various allegations that have been made by anyhow. I think we have provided a summary, I think in the introductory statement, that basically says Parliament has a recognition agreement with the recognized union, which in this regard is NEHAO. And in terms of that recognition agreement, there are processes and mechanisms that have been in place, which basically means that there's a bargaining chamber. That bargaining chamber deals with quite a number of issues. Over and above that, members of the committee, through you, or chairpersons, recall that when there were instances of labor instability within the institution, there were interventions that were made by executive authority, and executive authority in this regard basically established a connection with the leadership. How, more specifically, the President and the Deputy General Secretary of NEHAO, in order to make sure that we normalize this particular process. And of course, Secretary was there to support that initiative. We were then asked out of that process, meaning the Deputy General Secretary of NEHAO and myself, to then oversee the process of normalizing issues, meaning dealing with each and every issue that would be there on the table. And that process has been going ahead as envisaged by the executive authority and as envisaged by the leadership of NEHAO that I have been in contact with through the Deputy General Secretary in this regard. So the matter, some of the matters that are before here, I can confirm basically to say that some of those matters are matters that are there, and some of them definitely are new in this regard. So as we'll be dealing with the matters that are here, we'll look at it in that context. And over and above that, we can indicate that these are the same matters that have been served in other platforms, in other forums, meaning the public protector was approached on the basis of the same information that is here, and the same issues that the committee will be dealing with. The executive authority, Parliament, was also approached on the basis of the same information that is there. So it's matters that would be serving in various platforms, and some of it members of the committee would have seen reflected in one form or the other than through this and that form of media reporting, as it were. The first one on the allegation to refuse to pay performance bonus. The first issue that we have to say over and above the explanation that we have given there, Honorable Court Chairpersons and Honorable Members, is that this is a matter that is currently under discussion in the bargaining chamber, and a matter that has not been finalized as yet, and probably would not be classified as refusal to, because it's a matter that is under consideration and analyzation. We have given the reasoning that has been put forward on the management side in this regard, which are basically some of the arguments that have been there. but the matter is still under consideration. In fact, the team that was set up that consisted of the provincial secretary of Nehau in the Western Cape, the regional secretary of Nehau in the Western Cape, the secretary of Nehau in Parliament was discussing with the management team that was led, that had the secretary, the CFO, and the HR executive in this regard. And they were deliberating on this matter. They have not found each other on the matter. The matter was referred to the Deputy General Secretary of Nehau and myself, which is a structure that was established by the executive authority. We have not finalized on this matter. So basically, the matter is still an ongoing matter in the bargaining chamber. Why it's brought here in this form, I really have no idea, except that the key issue that, from my side, that we want to encourage is to reaffirm the existing structure that has been set up, meaning reaffirm the structures that are there in terms of the collective bargaining agreements that both parties have signed and work within that collective bargaining structure. And secondly, there's a secondary structure that has been set up by the executive authority and the leadership of NEHAU to work within that particular structure should the collective bargaining mechanisms not be successful at that level. So I think, Honorable Co-Chairperson, I mean, over and above what we have indicated here, I think in the interest of transparency, we've given you all the information here. But the essence of the argument is, I mean, of our response in this regard, this is a matter that is not yet finalized, it's still under discussion. I mean, those processes should be allowed to unfold, take course, and come to a particular conclusion. And once they've come to a particular conclusion, then we'll be in a particular position then to respond. Any other thing that I would be saying here would really be preemptive and would be presumptuous on my part. On alleged contravention of recruitment and selection, there are a number of issues that have been cited, I think, in the documentation that was provided to us. On our part, we have a recruitment policy. I mean, we have a policy that helps us to manage issues of recruitment and selection. That policy basically enjoins us to advertise posts once those posts exist and they are vacant and they are funded. And the job descriptions in terms of those posts have been approved. So you have posts that are vacant, that were vacant, that were funded, that required to be filled at the time, and they were advertised, and candidates applied. And for some of these posts, we had to go to two or three interviews because the first interviews were not, were not successful, meaning that we were not able to get those candidates that we needed at the time. So some of them we have had to engage in headhunting methods in that regard. But they all complied with our policies in this regard. Now, candidates go through a competitive process of interview, right? Which all of these candidates have gone through a competitive process of interview. So there is no candidate that went through right directly being the sole and single candidate. In going through that competitive process of interviewing, they were successful. We did additional psychometric assessments that were conducted. And once we have done psychometric assessments, then we have to do the next step. That relates to checking the background, which would check background in terms of self-clearance, ID, qualifications, and verification.
Now, the issues cited in the examples here, all of them are issues that were dealt with during the interviews, meaning none of the candidates basically hid anything from the institution. The institution interrogated in the interviews all of those issues that have been cited, and we found in our engagement during the interviews that we were satisfied with the responses that they put them. And when we did verification of information, which includes, amongst others, talking to references. We did our reference check in that regard, which sets out accordingly, and in terms of the qualifications, the checks were done in that regard, as is normally the case, and hence the recommendation to appoint was made and the offers were given. And they were duly accepted in this regard. So what we are indicating from our side in this regard, that full compliance in this regard, we are not quite certain as to why perhaps, the assertions are made in that regard, but all of those things that are noted, like cases that are cited, we discuss them, we engage, with the colleagues. We are quite satisfied that is the panel that did the interviews were quite satisfied with the responses that were provided. They canvassed all the areas that were there, which then met our specific criteria in this regard. Then the filling in of vacancies, the issue of the filling in of vacancies when it's raised is we have reported in this particular committee and in other structures about the constraints that Parliament has, which Parliament is not unique in that space because it's a country. We are having all of us constraints. The Minister of Finance, when he presented his medium-term expenditure framework last year and presenting the budget this year, indicated very clearly that there would have to be belt-tightening that is occurring within the various votes that are there, and Parliament is not exempted from that. So we are directly affected in that regard, in the sense that we have had to lose about 33 million in the previous financial year, and funds that were allocated to us. In this particular financial year, we have lost 129 million, of which 88 million thereof is on compensation of employees. In the next financial year, we're going to be losing 180 million from our budget in that regard, affecting also your compensation of employees. Now, if on the side of the institution, meaning at the creative authority level and accounting officer level, we would ignore that reality, it means we will fill in positions when we don't have money. What that means in simple terms, it means we will appear in this committee the next time on different grounds that we have overexpended in terms of the allocations that are there. So we had to take steps to look at those issues. What steps did we take? We took steps of basically relooking at the posts that were there and say, well, what posts are critical for the institution? So we went through each and every line manager, looking at those critical posts. We also then went through posts that were not filled for quite some time, meaning there were posts within the institutions that had not been filled for more than 2 or 3 years. And we were working with the relevant line managers who then identified these particular posts, which we then had to fill, meaning we didn't dismiss anybody at the time. We were dealing with posts that were vacant, and those posts were frozen. Then we did further work in that regard. That was 2015. We did further work in 2016 because we're experiencing the same pressure to say what else can we do in order to save and to make sure that we live within our means and we don't overexpend in this regard. Now, it came to the figure now that we have referred to of 60 positions. And those positions, we are quite clear that the bias has indicated before. Is a bias that will be given to posts in the parliamentary business side. And I think
say parliamentary business because I'm not saying core business, I'm saying all of those posts that are in support of the parliamentary business. Now, we have communicated that to management, we have communicated that to staff, and we continue to communicate the same information across the board. So it's dealing with those issues. It's a rational process of management. It's not about inefficiency, and it's time to be within our means. At some point, it means we have to do a better tightening elsewhere. And doing a better tightening somewhere basically means there are certain things that you're not going to be able to do. If we don't do that, pure and simple, it means we are going to be faced with a parliament that is overspent in those areas, which includes compensation, the area of compensation of employees. Now, the area affected is not only compensation of employees. Goods and services area is also affected in that space, meaning the work that money that is available to support the work of parliament in terms of its purpose affected in that space. We have had to implement what we refer to as cost-saving measures. Cost-saving measures that are looking at savings in various spaces. For instance, we had to cut down on the purchase of flowers. There were lots of flowers that we used to buy on a daily basis. So we cut that and just remain with special events, as it were. We had to relocate the area of travel, which we looked at. We looked at printing. Printing, most of the printing was being internally, that you see, except for printing of bills, which we still do externally, but our aim is to do all printing internally. So, and those measures were not measures that we have only adopted here in Parliament. They are measures that we have also had to find consensus within the other institutions within the legislative sector, meaning the Speaker's Forum also then took corresponding decisions to say these are the measures that they, the speakers in their respective institutions will apply. So those, and then the third element there too, we had to then ask the question of you can't do cutting to the point that you're not able to do, members are not able to fulfill their constitutional responsibility. So one of the areas that we then looked at, that we asked the management to work on, is to deal with the issue of what we say, weeding out the inefficiency within the system, or doing some cost saving without necessarily cutting all the jobs that need to be done. For instance, the simple example that I give in that regard is that when we do strategic management, we are now not going out somewhere to do that planning. That planning we do in-house here, meaning we pick on a weekend from Friday right up to Sunday, do our work here, and then we're able then to save a million or so in that regard and still produce the strategic plan. So we have said, let's look at those types of measures where we can save and still make sure that the service is delivered in that regard. And then I have asked CFO and the rest of the management team also to look at what we refer to as income generating mechanisms. We know that we run a canteen, and the canteen, even though we subsidize, but we do generate some income at that level. And we have said, let's look at other measures that we can do as parliament where we can generate some kind of income. So we have tried to identify quite a number of areas where we're in advanced stages at different levels on the things that we think can be proposed without necessarily affecting the work of Parliament and parliamentarians as it were. On the bursary allocation, we have provided the bursary allocation to the members, and the members would record, I think on page 16, we have given you in terms of the resources that have been expended from 2014, 2015, 2016, and 2017. We have also given you, I think for 2017, the numbers four bursaries, you will see that they were saying 247 bursaries have been given for junior and professional staff, which means your staff in the bargaining chamber, that is your A to C. Then your middle management, we have about three staff members that have been given. In fact, we have about 20 staff members that have been given the bursaries. And then at senior management level, we have about three staff members that have been given. And you can see the pyramid kind of system. And the way bursaries are given in this regard is that...
Sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you. If you continue in the session, you're going to be here in some of the time. You know what I thought, Honorable Members, because it almost sounds like we're in a management meeting where we've been told what is being done. Maybe what you should do, secretary, is to say there is a policy on bursary, these are the challenges. But to say to us, I've given Vincent a bursary and I've given John a bursary, that belongs to a management meeting. Ours is really oversight. I'm looking at our members because if we go through everything they've done, we're almost co-managing with them. Rather than them saying to us there's a policy, so that we can ask other businesses the policy, why has the policy been complied with? I'm just checking the time. We've now been here for an hour. We haven't reached the end of the input. So I'm looking at members. My own view, Honorable Members, would be ours is to do oversight. And really what we should be saying to you, because I'm sure members would have questions on policy, not on the rands and cents. So is there a bursary policy? Yes, there is. No, it's in process. And members will ask when it's going to be concluded. But if you went and said to us, we gave a bursary to A and we gave a bursary to B, doesn't help us. So I'm looking at members just to find a way, because I think we'll be here until midnight if we went in this fashion. So if you either try and summarize, Secretary, in the next 10 minutes and then allow members to ask, or just really focus on the strategic point, because that's really what we're about. We're overseeing and we're not co-governing or co-managing it. So maybe in 10 minutes you should try and summarize, we'll then open it up to members for questions of strategy. I mean, that's really our business. You've got 100 rand that we've given you. Ours is how did you use that 100 rand? And how do you fund whatever the case might be? That really should be our focus. I don't want us, Honorable Members, to degenerate into a management issue where we come and account. If they account to the Speaker and the Chair, ours must be, there's a policy, has it been complied with? And where we know that it hasn't been complied with, because remember, we will then say, but you've not complied with it, tell us why have you not complied with it. So can I ask you then, Secretary, I'm sorry to have interrupted you, but it's 5 to 7. Can I allow you, at the absolute latest, by 10 to 7, to have summarized whatever it is you want to say? And then we'll ask members to either condone what you said or to ask further questions. Is that okay, Honorable Member? Thank you. So you've got, at the absolute latest, 15 minutes to say whatever you want to say, and then hopefully be prepared to field questions that members have to have. I'm sorry to have done that, but over to you. You've got 15 minutes, sir.
Thank you, for your guidance. So I think in this regard, what we are saying is we have a bursary policy that supports our strategic intention. And of course, overall, I supported also to this particular committee that we are reviewing policies in the HRA, all of them. Which would deal with what you refer to now as learning and development. So you are not going to have other policies as such. You have learning and development. We are looking at the revised performance management system, and we are looking generally at your revised conditions of employment with a view of improving what we have in that space. So for the purposes of the question asked, say that, Jefferson, that we're in line with the policy that is applicable at this point in time. Then there are questions that are raised on the contravention or possible contravention of the FMTPLA, particularly referring to the supply chain management system. Now, the FMTPLA for supply chain management system also has the regulations which are promulgated by the various authorities. The Act and those regulations plus the Act, they empower the Secretary to make sure that the resources are utilized appropriately, and they indicate that in terms of supply chain management, what are the responsibilities that must be put in place, including ensuring that the Secretary appropriately delegates work in this regard. So the question asked on the special beast, the adjudication committee, that the Secretary is empowered in terms of Section 4 of the regulation to basically make sure that we appoint the relevant people in that regard, which we think that in full compliance at that level. If you look at the report on upgrading of the server of Parliament, we are in the process of basically making sure that we ensure that the infrastructure on ICT is at the right level when it comes to Parliament. We have approved recently, Chairperson, co-chair, we have approved recently the ICT policy, the ICT strategy. And on the basis of that ICT policy and ICT strategy, we have identified a number of things within which to work on. And the internet server is one of those key and crucial ones, particularly looking at the nature of our business, that when members and staff are not here, they need to be able to access that facility, and we need to make sure that it's fast, and we need to make sure that it helps, I mean, they're able then to get the information that they require. In the past, we have had instances where members and staff were not able to access that particular facility as quick as possible. So we have had to engage on that particular approach. So the policy, I mean, what is done is in line with the policy framework, as it were. Then on the stakeholder survey, the stakeholder management, first and foremost, when we do the strategy, one of the key things that we have to do is to kind of determine what are the stakeholders for Parliament. And in this regard, Parliament has not had a stakeholder strategy or stakeholder plan. Now, we have put in our plan the APT for financial year 2016-17, a plan to conduct such a stakeholder analysis. And I'm pleased to indicate to this particular committee that we are now at the stage where we are finalizing that draft framework and that draft policy, which will then, amongst other issues, indicate how Parliament relates to the various stakeholders, both internal stakeholders, external stakeholders, and the surveys that we do. We do annual surveys, honorable co-chairs and honorable members. The surveys we do internal survey that looks at the satisfaction levels of members and staff. And secondly, we do surveys that are externally orientated. Now, when you do a survey, you always must do it against some service charter and some plan. So this stakeholder management plan is going to lead us to an institutional service charter. You would know that for government, they have what they refer to as the Bajpili principles, and you have also a charter that encapsulates very well what government says it's going to do and how it's going to do it. For Parliament, we have not had such an instrument. So this particular exercise will lead us to that. So what we are reporting here is the first step around that, where this particular research company had to now go and ask these various stakeholders, why do you need an external person? You need objectivity. You can't have yourself, if you're evaluating your work and evaluating yourself, you conduct the evaluation yourself. You need to get some independent person. And in this instance, this particular company has helped us to do that particular exercise. Now, we have provided on page 18, without going through the details, co-chairs the budget as requested. I don't know whether, Chair, if I would have left something. In fact, it's the enterprise resource planning and management. The enterprise planning and resource management system. We currently have a system that is in place, which has been operational now for more than 10 years. That system, of course, was implemented and designed at that time when we had a particular business model, which was in the third parliament. So now we're in the fifth parliament. Some of the the functionalities that we have there don't match the growth that the institution has experienced over time. So we had asked that the assessment be done on that way. And the report was presented to myself as secretary. From there, I have asked that a business case be done. A business case is basically it would combine the needs within the institution. It would say what is it that you are seeking to solve and how you seek to address that. That business case, honorable co-chairs and honorable members, is still at a very early stage of engagement and has not even yet been presented to executive authority. So that's the process that we're engaging. Once we have done the business case, then we will move on to the next steps, which will be what is it that we do, what is it that we can afford. So that's the level and the stage where we are in terms of the enterprise resource management system. I hope, Honorable Chair, I have not missed any crucial questions that the committee wanted. Thank you very much.
Sorry to have rushed you, Secretary. Thank you. We will open it up to members. I think the only issue, and if you did cover it, forgive me, was the update on the institution's 2017-2018 budget. But you can respond to that one later. Let's see what the others. Mm-hmm. We can even respond to it tomorrow if necessary. There are really two areas, Secretary, that I think members, or certainly I would. I'm going to ask three questions, and I'll open it up to two members, and others can take non-financial and financial. If we look at the non-financial, you've raised at least four or five policies. You spoke about performance management, and I suppose bonus support is there. You spoke about a recruitment policy. I would assume there's a bursary allocation policy, or whatever you want to call it. You just now spoke about the ICT policy, and then there's a supply chain management policy. You need to tell members of this committee, are those policies finalized and in place? Because that's the only way we can oversee. Because if they're not, members here will be able to say, but it's not, they're not in place because I heard it from X or Y. Do we have those policies and are they in place? Because our question the next time we see you is, why have you deviated from policy? I don't want to know what you did with the firebrand. Why did you deviate from policy? So do we have, as we speak, policy? And have they been duly signed off by the relevant authority? Because to have it and it hasn't been signed off by speaker and chair wouldn't fulfill it. So is there policy, and I'm looking at these five, there might be others that members were speaking about, but certainly performance management policy, do we have a policy, has it been signed off? Supply chain management, is there policy, has it been signed off, and have we moved from decentralized to centralized? So that when we come back, we are able to ask the real question. So on these four or five policies, if tomorrow we said to you, provide those policies to members so that we can do independent oversight, will you be able to do that for us? So that's issues around policy that I think we should respond to at that level. And members will then say, but that policy was deviated from, and they can ask it. So if you could respond to that, because it will assist members to focus them. Maybe we should just deal with non-financial at this point, and then we'll come to financial later. Are there any policy gaps that you have identified? Because when members start speaking and they know of policy gaps, you must be able to answer. Are there any policy gaps that you are still working on, and have you concluded them? Because financial year 2017-2018 is gone. When are we going to see finality to whatever policies are outstanding so that members can turn around and say it's not acceptable? Are all policies in place? Are you working on policies? And when do you expect to have them finalized so members could have them in their possessions to do effective oversight? Let me take two or three and then we'll come back. So those are my questions. Anybody else wants to talk to on non-financial? We'll get to the financial system now. We were just talking about policy and those type of things. Then we'll get to why did he spend 10 rand or whatever the case is. That's clear. Well, before we come to you, Honorable Stenis, and I see Honorable Waters on to make another suggestion. Oh, you're going to, eh? Oh, you want to ask the question? No, it's fine. If you don't, we will try and guide each other, and we'll take it from there. Let's take Stenis, September, Waters, Singh, everybody else to speak from. No, let me revise it. Let me allow members to talk on anything. But if we do that, then we must limit it on time. Is that okay? If we're going to talk on anything, then we should be saying, you'll get 3 minutes to raise your question or 5 minutes, otherwise we'll be entering. Yeah, that's the point then. All right, we'll have a second and a third round and whatever the case might be, because I don't want a situation where others won't speak, and I know that others have asked to leave at 7:30. So we have to be cognizant to that type of thing. Maybe you should ask those members first if you have any pressing questions. One or two pressing questions and we will release you. Anybody that's leaving at 7:30 that would like to raise a question, if you could indicate, shake him up. Yes, sir?
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Thank you for that presentation, I very quickly wanted to say, you know, irregular expenditure that almost really does happen, but it's a process to regularize it. I think one of the concerns I have here is the issue of Nehao. Could you please give us some guidance as to how much more time is required to try and finalize this matter? Do you have an idea? And, one of the major issues we've had is about travel expenses, and I think there's some intervention by yourself just to be paying dividends in your cost-cutting measures, which is very good. Now, in terms of your travel and things, what process, is there a dedicated process you're putting in place to try and cut costs on that, and how much you're expecting to save in terms of your travel or hotel costs? Obviously, you've done some exercising to see what you're going to be able to save, feedback on what
following manner. If the Secretary can clarify, we understand that the issue of the government on the part of the bargaining council, but if you can clarify, is there a clear policy on the matter that is in the council, and if not, what is it that going to be done? Can you tell us whether that policy are being negotiated, whether a clear policy are being negotiated at the same time at the council, or is it just looking at a dispute mechanism? If it's not, then I think you should just tell us how that's going to be processed. I think I picked up also in the presentation that you made on staff evaluation. Again, there it does come across in the manner that you presented that it doesn't look like there's a proper guidance, meaning probably a proper policy that then guides how it needs to be done, as opposed to looking at a global position of what the institution has, for example, you know, the have fared in particular, and therefore almost arbitrarily the rest of the staff must then conform itself to some global figure that you have arrived at one way or another, which the way that you explain it then indeed could mean that people are being prejudiced and there could be some labor relations question marks put around the fact that in the absence of a proper policy housing, you or the jury arrive at a particular decision. Those are my two points. Thank you
very much. Thank
you very much, Chairperson, and apologies for being slightly late. Let me just clear up. I mean, we've never had a bursary policy. The policy has been called the Reviewed Policy on Learning and Development since 2009. It's not a new development. It's not a new change. It's not under the administration. The policy has always been called that. I would just like to understand from the Secretary, because the policy itself defines employee in the definition, and has a separate definition for the Secretary. Then goes further to say the policy applies to employees. So I'd like to understand if the Secretary of Parliament has, if he has awarded been awarded a bursary in terms of this policy, whether he himself signed off that bursary, or whether in fact that bursary was signed off by somebody else. Because I think it would be odd if in terms of the definition of Parliament's own policy, one would be responsible for approving bursaries and then would sign off one for himself. So I would just like some clarity on that. Chair, I've got a host of questions arising from the report. I don't know if we're going to hold them until the second round or if we want to continue, but when we were given the documentation, I've examined it quite extensively. There's a variety of questions arising.
Choose just one more and everybody else will come back to just anyone, your priority questions.
Well, sure.
Or all of them are priority.
Every
I know.
Single one of them is priority, I'm afraid, Mr. Chairman. Let's just deal with supply chain management in the policy environment.
Right.
If we just understand what the rationale is for centralizing the supply chain management, can we also understand what is specifically wrong with the current decentralized arrangement, and will the centralization require amending the supply chain management regulation?
I thank you, sir. Honorable Singh.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the comprehensive responses that we received. I just note, and this is not a question, that arising from the minutes which we're going to deal with tomorrow, there was one issue regarding the Portfolio Committee on International Relations that the Western Sahara workshop they had, and SASCO we invited, and that response is not here, so maybe we can get some response tomorrow. It's in the minutes of the last meeting, Secretary. So you'll see that in the minutes. And then also not a question, and I'm not going to carry on in that vein, is did I hear the Secretary correct when he said that organized labor have now agreed to participate in the performance management process? Chairperson, my two questions that are related basically to funding of staffing, vacancies, etc. Now, I understand that the budget is constrained and you cannot fill all the vacancies. But to that extent, it's a matter of concern that in the Speaker's office in this year, the detailed breakdown, that almost 40 million rand is for these 43 staff that are attached to the presiding office. And what is the ratio to the total salary of this particular amount that we are spending? And then in this document, Chairperson, it is stated that the employees are recruited on contracts linked to the term of office of the presiding officers. Now, we know presiding officers are not necessarily there for 5 years. The parliamentary term is 5 years. So tomorrow, if the House Chairperson, a particular House Chairperson, is redeployed, what happens to that person that's a contract to that House Chairperson or the Speaker? That's one of my questions. Then, when it comes to cost-cutting and trying to save money, on the one hand, we're told that the performance bonuses, we're not paying bonuses because we don't have the money and the negotiations are still carrying on. What is the thinking on a possible salary increase for staff? Because we don't want a situation to arise where we were held ransom last year, where we couldn't perform in Parliament for a few days. So what is the thinking around that? What contingencies are there? And what motivated the payment of quote-unquote danger pay to some officials that work within a certain component of Parliament? I mean, is there a good reason for that? If we're constrained with resources, how can that money be made available?
that's it.
I'll just stop there and I will ask for a question.
I have noted, and we're not leaving you out, but I have noted Waters and Coleman. Can we allow them to respond, and Waters and Coleman and anybody else? Is that okay? Otherwise, we lose the question that members have asked. Speaker, Secretary, you and your staff.
Thank you, honourable members, for the questions. The question asked by the chair, indeed for all these areas, the performance management policy, performance management is regulated, recruitment is regulated. In terms of the policy, we have an ICT, policy and strategy, and we have a supply chain management regulation. So we have. Now, whether these policies have gaps, yes indeed. The policies that we have gaps, because many of the policies that we have are over 10 years, and they have not progressed with the development of the institution. So we need to align them to the development of the institution and the strategy as it were. So we are embarking on a process of reviewing wholesale quite a number of policies, and more specifically the policies that are related to HR. They will change from what they are. There is also a process to look at reviewing the supply chain management regulations, and that's a process that Parliament is doing with the provincial legislature, that have also made representations on improving that provincial space. So the long and short of it, the policies are there, but we're looking at working on them. Then in terms of the questions on how much more time is required, of course, on the side of the institution, and I can safely say that I'm speaking on behalf of the regulatory authority in this regard, that they would also want to see this process finalized as soon as possible so that we get to normality. Which I think is an expectation from quite a lot of people within the institution and outside. But I can't give time because the parties are engaged. All I can say is we are engaged as parties in that stream, meaning the HRE and the management team engages with the union colleagues on a regular basis. On my side, I engage with the Deputy General Secretary of NEHAU on a regular basis on these issues. And we give feedback to our principals in this regard, meaning I give feedback to the executive authority, and the General Deputy General Secretary gives feedback to the President of NEHAU, who all are keenly looking at this matter in order to make sure that we get back to a normal state in this regard. Now, in terms of travel, the measures that we are putting around travel are multiple. The first part is that we have presented last time on the expenditure question that travel is one of the biggest items. But in terms of the way we have structured our administration, we are not focused on travel. So it's inefficient to then have the biggest item on your expenditure not properly managed in a particular fashion. So we've put in place a mechanism to deal with that aspect so that we can properly manage it. But over and above that, we are improving our planning of work, meaning we have asked over and above just doing APT, the operational plan, the line managers are expected now to do projections. Projections that will be based both on financial and non-financial information in terms of what you are going to be doing. And therefore, and we couple that with the procurement plan of saying, this is what I'm going to do in this regard. And we're updating that also to the work of committees. As you know, that committees also have their own plans on what they will do. So we then are trying to put in place systems such that administratively we can then gain from planning in advance, because many of the things that we do, if you don't plan in advance, the cost just on procuring those services can go up. And if you do that work earlier, sometimes we can save up 60% of the cost in Africa. So that's what we're doing. The speaker and the chair, they've indicated in terms of the delegations that go on where they approve. We have limited the number of delegations. Before, we'll be having quite a number of people that are there. So for both members and staff, the number of delegations is taken down. The number of support staff will require certain people to then share in terms of the support staff, which, of course, and it also depends on the content of what is going to be done at that level. Then the third element there too is that we're having engagements with the airlines. Because if you have engagements with the airlines, then you're able then to get much more favorable deals in that regard. So we have concluded with some of the major airlines our corporate agreement in that regard. We have worked with the car hire companies to also conclude corporate agreements in that regard. The next step would be to look at hotels. I think we're not there yet on the hotels, so that we can conclude again corporate agreement. What that means is that if when you then procure, then as an institution you may get then favorable conditions. And secondly, we're able then to get some points for some of those corporate agreements that we can then utilize as an institution. So it's a multi-pronged strategy that we're engaging in this regard. Then in terms of a peer policy on performance management, I think the first issue to say is the policy is there, but it has gaps, right? as we have indicated. So we acknowledge that and the gaps for us, they are mostly linked to, you want a policy that is aligned to your strategy, that enables you to do things in terms of your strategy. Now, the previous environment that we had, just to refresh, we were moving on what we referred to as the transactional approach or the input-based system. We have now said you measure results and you measure the impact of what happens out there. The policy environment that we have now does not quite deal with that aspect of dealing with the results and the outcome. Asking what is the gap in that regard. So when we are doing the review will be helping us to deal with that issue. And it ties up then very nicely with the question asked on how then do you measure that? Because in the past what you heard is the measurement of individual performance was divorced from the measurement of the institutional performance. Meaning you could possibly have a situation where individually we say perform at 90% or 100%, but in terms of our actual performance, right, 60%. And that doesn't tally, and that doesn't work very nice, because if you say you are performing, then you are saying you are achieving the result in that regard. So part of the engagement with organized labor, which is a much higher level strategic engagement, is we are all concerned with achieving institutional results. We're all concerned with making sure that the support is provided rightly to members, and we're all concerned with enabling the staff to basically provide that kind of service. And so for us to then deal with that, we need to then make sure that the policy environment that we have then catches up with the new system that is there. Because the one that is referred to of 2009 and some of the policies are 2006, we are not quite there at that time. We are moving on a different basis. We are driven by a different philosophy as an institution. Now, the engagements between the union and management, they are both at the policy level and how then they are going to apply them. Which, I mean, without saying much, I think parties are much more closer in terms of what I have been able to hear than being far apart on issues. But it's a matter that is still a subject of engagement. It's a matter that we are also drawing experience from what is happening in the public sector, meaning we're not starting from scratch. Public sector, that is government, has engaged on those issues, so we're learning on how they have dealt with those issues. And both parties are engaged at that level. And that's one of the issues, basically, that the Secretary to Parliament and the Deputy General Secretary to Parliament have been asked to resolve with some kind of dynamic. Then, on issues that are related to the policy that manages bribery, indeed, the policy exists, as we have said, in terms of management of there's a committee that has been established to deal with that. The secretary does not sit in that committee. That committee basically then makes the decisions around the allocations of budget. The secretary does not sign recommendations from that particular committee, or does not even receive reports as it were. Of course, how you deal with issues of supporting staff members. Firstly, you have a performance agreement. The performance agreement stipulates these are the things that you are supposed to achieve. It then has a section that says what kind of learning do you require. It's called the CDT, that is your development time. From there, individual employees then indicate this is a development that you need in order for you to be able to achieve the targets that have been set. So each employee will then say this, and over and above that, the institution will then identify also and say, well, we think you need additional training here and there and so forth. So we have two of those issues that are indicated there, which then inform, which is signed by both, you know, your line manager and the employee. And in this instance, you'll be talking about then the performance agreement that is signed by, you know, the manager and the employee, and which is then utilized to then inform the deliberation and decision-making in that particular aspect. So that's the policy orientation and the implementation thereof. The centralization of SCM.
I want to free him to what is going to happen. The question, that was one part. The second part was, in terms of yourself, who approves it? Is it that committee that approves it? I just wanted us to get it over and done with.
Because I know, sir, but I mean, I think it's important because there's no provision for a committee in this policy.
Yes.
So I want to understand in what terms that of this policy that's passed by Parliament is that committee established. This policy talks only about the secretary's department. I won't talk about it.
All right. You can answer this then if you don't, because you see tomorrow we're meeting presiding officers. Some of these questions we can put to the presiding officer. If we think that it was inappropriate for secretary, for instance, to authorize his own bursary, we could put those because we've asked presiding officers to come so that we can raise some of these questions to that effect. The policy versus the practice, I think, is what he's asking. Is the policy and the practice aligned? And if it's not aligned, are we going to get them aligned? Because we can raise it tomorrow. The bursary policy and the practice. You spoke about this committee. I think what Honorable Senator is saying is that policy doesn't have provision for a committee. If you could just answer that one, and we can park it for tomorrow when we have the executive authority, because I think it might put you in a difficult position because we're talking about you to defend yourself. But you want to talk on that one? Otherwise, we'll park it for speaker tomorrow.
Well, I can. That's why, Honorable Chair, thanks for that intervention. That's why I am referring to policy. I don't think it would be appropriate for the Secretary to. I think I'm appearing here representing the institution. Now, from the policy side, I mean, the key question that you'll be asking would be that the Secretary has a performance agreement that is signed and all of that, and I think that is important. To the committee. So our perspective, Chairperson, is that things have occurred in line with the policy framework, and of course that issue can be further explored and conversed with the relevant line manager in that regard.
Chair, a point of order. I asked a simple question whether the policy being followed. There's no provision in the policy of farming for a committee. I don't think this can be that at all to anybody else. The secretary is saying that bursaries have been allocated to policy. It's my proposition that there's no position in this policy which what the secretary should be applying in Parliament for a committee. It gives the authority to the secretary's department, which means that he's accountable. So if there's a committee that's being formed, a committee must be formed in terms of a policy. This policy, the reviewed policy on learning and development, found in 09 by Max Sisulu and Mr. Mashani, doesn't provide for a committee. Put the locus in the secretary's.
To get us out of there, can I ask a question, Secretary, and we can take it up tomorrow. Has there been a revision to the policy that was signed in 2009, yes or no? Has there been a revision?
The committee that is established was established during the time of Secretary Kigan, right? There's a mandating process that was done at that time. As Secretary, the current incumbent in this instance, there's yet nothing that has changed in the policy that has. If there's any change that will be happening, it's on all the other processes that I indicated. So the committee that is there was approved by the former secretary,
Because we don't get stuck on dialogue. Can this be one of those that we flag and ask the accounting or the executive authority tomorrow? I mean, it's 24 hours later. Can we raise, because I think your point that you're raising a valid, can we just park that, just on this policy one, and clarify it and give our own view when we receive input from speaker and chair tomorrow? Is that okay? Thank you so much.
I can forward the memo that is
done. Yeah, if you can forward that to us in advance so that we can ask questions, yeah. Hold on, do you want to reopen it, Coleman, just for this one?
No. I just wanted to ask you, because we don't have that question ourselves, and we don't have this one, whether there's anything that talks of delegation, because there might be something to that regard, or a permission process. We do not have such details. And perhaps it would be one of the issues. So that when we come tomorrow together, when we meet with the speaker tomorrow, we are able to transfer it to
If I understand what members are saying, firstly, we don't have that policy. No, that's what I'm saying. We don't have that policy, so it just advantages some of us. Between now, Cindy and Darren, if you guys could just make sure at least by the beginning of tomorrow we have that policy and everything associated with that policy, so that when we have discussion with speaker, all of us are on the same page.
And the memo,
whatever it is. So can we leave it at that point, that anything to do with bursary allocation, we don't have the policy. It's just this advantage of so many of us. Please give that to us. Darren, I know Cindy will be here tomorrow. Darren, if you could get that and get it to members as soon as possible, by tomorrow, so that when we do engage with speaker, at least we've had sight or we can refer to the policy as being referred to. I want to close on the bursary matter. Do you want to talk to the bursary matter? On the bursary matter. Just so that tomorrow we have a constructive discussion. Yeah.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Linking to your introduction, when last was policy reviewed? Stop. Bring us a board.
Chair, I'm glad to hear the presiding officer is all the executive authority will be with us tomorrow. So they will probably account for the lack of performance contract that we raised last time. But the point about the bursaries is that the secretary said that when Parliament awards bursaries to staff members, they look at the performance contract to see if training is needed. And the question is then, how did the secretary get a bursary without a performance contract? like that answer tomorrow.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that's how I want to park these things, because some of them belong to the higher authority. If there's no policy, how do you give it? If there's a policy, how updated is it? So everything to do with diversity policy and performance policy, if that could be packaged, and that will be a focus area tomorrow for members. The policy, we're really not interested in anything else, because we want to see compliance with policy. That's for us important, compliance with policy around that matter, and then I'm going to move on.
Yeah, I just want to get some clarity from you, because I fear what's going to happen tomorrow is that the presiding officer is going to make a valid point, and I would be sympathetic with that point, that in fact it's not their job to be responsible for implementation. Their answer to us is going to be, we set policy, we approve policy, it's up to the administration to implement those policies. So in the light of that's going to happen tomorrow, then I would like to another back to the chair of this with the Secretary of Parliament, because if we have policies in place, the Secretary of Parliament must act in terms of those policies. You can't make stuff up on the fly, particularly if there are policies in place. You can't establish committees, there's no provision for them. You can't make appointments, there's no power or delegation. So my worry is we're going to get this, we're going to get the planning officer tomorrow. So they're going to say, well, we set the policies up to the administration to follow those policies. And it's becoming clear to me that this policy is not being followed.
I think, Jay, it would be important to have necessary documentation so that we are not confused what is meant. But also to allow the secretary, when they speak, because there are issues that were acknowledged that over the period of 10 years, some of the policies require update. So that if there are recommendations that are interested in terms of how we're moving forward in dealing with some of the issues. I mean, admitted areas around HR was cited as part of the area that requires some development. So I think it's important to get a memo, because the memo may be giving effect to the police rather than really trying to be conclusive here. And of course, we must be awake to the reality that tomorrow as well, the expectations based on the program that we have requested the presiding officer to speak on.
Now, before you continue, from a logistics point of view, transport has been organized for Coleman, Gwabaza, Singh, Gayle. It was originally organized for 8 o'clock, but I've asked them to make transport at 9 o'clock, and that's why I'm going to the route for some time. These are the names I have. If there are any other names that require transport, if there are any other names that require transport, let's add them onto this. So if there's anybody else that would require transport, if you can indicate so that we can get people to work on that. And I'm together co-chair will be strict on time, otherwise we delay everybody. Currently it is arranged for Coleman, Gwabaza, Singh, Gayla. And now Honorable Masondo is also indicating that we want transport. Singh not. Singh take off in place of Singh Masondo. And we will arrange transport for 9 o'clock. Is that okay? Well, we'll have to carry on later on. I mean, at another point, I'm just saying. We've been here from 7 this morning.
Yeah.
9 o'clock, all right. We can end with Sondo, and at 9 o'clock we will stop. And before that, depending how far we've gone, we'll decide how we carry forward anything else. All matters around bursary policy and so on, we are not entertaining. Please give us all the documentation, the policy that has been spoken about signed in 2009, and any other supplementary documents, so that when we discuss with Speaker, we are able to have a first of all, an equal level discussion, and secondly, a comprehensive discussion. Can your office make sure it's given to Darren so that we get it tomorrow? That whatever you have on it, as things stand. Darren, you liaise directly with the Darren. You lay directly with the speaker, with the secretary. We're moving off bursary policy. All the other matters you can carry on. It is 7:45. Can we allow you 10 minutes to respond to all these things, and we'll take a second round of questions. We're going to be strict with time and everybody else. is that okay? I don't know how many there are, but if you could at least try and just summarize all of them. In fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's about 5 of them, and then we'll go to the second round and members that haven't spoken. Right.
Thank you very much. I think the one of centralizing FCS, we indicated that that's the most prudent thing to do so that we can gain from economies of scale, we can be more efficient as an institution. And yes, it's in line with the FCM regulation, so we don't need to amend the regulation. Then on the question of the performance management, I think the question asked by Member Singh, indeed, as we had indicated before, just to come back to the question that was asked by we have indicated that for the policies that we have, there are gaps because those policies were done in 2006 and 2009. And we have embarked on a process now of reviewing wholesale the policies within the institution in order to make sure that they're in line with our strategy, they're in line with our business operations. As we speak, the creative authority will be considering quite a large number of policies that are before them for review. And we have already adopted some new policies for the institution, like on risk management, ICT, which amended covering us in quite a number of areas. So that process is underway. On the ratio of staff, I think that one we can provide a little bit later. In the speaker's office and the rest of the institution, we can provide later. What happens to staff that are attached to POs? For staff that are managed within the confines of the ministerial handbook, then we will have to apply the ministerial handbook in that regard, meaning that staff is attached to the principal content. For staff that are staff of parliament who are in those offices, because we have permanent staff of parliament who are in those offices, they will be regulated by the conditions of service of parliament, meaning they may not be affected as such. Thinking on possible handling of salary negotiation, I think the process of handling salary negotiation is that like any other institution, we have to work out on the mandating process, and that process is still underway. And at this point in time, we are not in a position to indicate, because we would have to get directive from the executive authority, and then once we have that mandating process, then we can be in a position to talk. The issue around danger pay is related to the type of, I mean, for any organization that offers such kind of a facility, it's related to the conditions that the employees find themselves in. And it's also about managing risk in that area. In this instance, we have had an instance where about 8 staff members were, you know, basically severely injured. And some had to go to hospital and so forth, which from an administration perspective, it poses a huge risk in that regard. You have to then look at what are the various measures that you would put in place. One of them is, of course, that allowance. The second aspect of it is the closing thereof, and looking at other measures that would assist in order to ensure that you minimize the risk. Of course, the ultimate issue around that is that you have no such incident whatsoever occurring. I think that's the best thing that you require. So you don't plan on the basis of the issue of risk. You plan on the basis, I mean, you hope that you don't have any such incident whatsoever. So it's quite a number of strategies that have to be looked at, but this one looks specifically at you have staff members who are in this particular situation and how do you, in this narrow sense, of narrow fashion, address this particular so we draw from what exists and what happens within that industry of people working in this type of jobs.
I've noted Honorable Waters and Honorable Coleman. Anybody else? Oh, Tabaza wants to be added. we will take Masondo, and then we will take the Nathan, and then we'll take Singh again.
Actually, I just want to know about follow-ups. Maybe not a new follow-ups in the answers.
Can I give you a chance to follow up later on?
Yeah,
I mean, after Masondo. After Masondo, it will be the Nathan, and then it will be Singh. Is that okay? Honorable Waters?
Thank you, Chair. I refer everyone to page 11 of the document. That's the organigram of the Speaker's office. Now, according to the document, the Speaker has 20 staff members at a cost here of 19.7 million. Then we've got this additional document saying it's not 20, it's 43 staff members at a cost of 38 million rand. But if you go to the documents that we've got initially, the original organogram, this one, that we got the last time, or the last meeting, which we never actually got around to dealing with, the Speaker's office is 72 people. So which one do we believe? The 20, the 43, or the 72? And it seems to me, Chair, that you know, we're being fed incorrect on the plus, we're being fed incorrect information. It seems to me that the secretary and his staff don't actually know how many staff members actually are in the Speaker's office. It's quite clear. We get three different options. I don't know which one to believe. Right. Now, if you also look at this original organogram, if you look at the Parliamentary Communications Service, they have 84, according to this, people working. A member's facility, by the way, is 19, remember. So my question is, it seems to be quite lopsided in certain areas when the focus of Parliament, and I'm not trying to be selfish here, should be around members. Right. So if you look at the communications, 84, we've still got the Parliamentary Millennium Programme in place. That's closed in 2013. So I'd like to know why these people are still in the organogram, and are we paying them, or what they're doing all day, sitting at a desk, doing nothing. There's a division called projects. What projects? What are they doing exactly? And this is the reason why I raised this issue about 6, 7, 8 months ago. I'm not quite sure how long now. Asking for every, not just the Speaker's office, but every office in Parliament and what people are doing. Because my fear is, Chair, as I say, is that some divisions are being overloaded and people are not being utilised efficiently and effectively, and other divisions are grossly under-resourced. Right. That's the first issue I'd like to raise. The second one has got to do with 1.4 in the document, where there's an undertaking that as far as how performance is managed, that it's going to be streamlined, that processes and procedures for collection, collation, verification of data will be reviewed for the forthcoming financial year of 17-18. So I welcome that, but I just want to get clarity. And my question is quite simple. So can I take it that from the first quarter of 17-18, given this undertaking by the Secretary, that we're going to get reports that provide useful and reliable information on targets that have been achieved and targets that have not been achieved? Because currently it's quite vague and confused when we get those reports. So will it be streamlined and will we get clear indications of what have and have not been achieved? Thank you, Chair. That's my two questions.
All right. I'm going to allow Coleman. On some of these honourable members, maybe we must also suggest the way forward. So, instance, your HR one, there's no way we can step in today or even tomorrow. Maybe the suggestion would be, let's have a special day to deal with HR matters. I'm saying, as you ask questions, so that we also give direction. I mean, our role is also to give direction to Parliament through these interactions. Coleman will be followed by Zabaza, then Masondo, then CNH, and then Singh, and then you'll respond, because it'll be two questions, so you'll have about 10 questions. Can we take Honorable Palmer?
Thanks so much, Honorable Chair. On the FCM, I just want to ask a question related to the actual practice. You know, FCM is also affecting members where the official committee is. And then sometimes you find that we ask for reference. I think what normally treasurer does to issue practice notes, I want to find out on average how often do say members are allowed to go abroad, because when you refer to members here, I can see here you refer to comments. How often are they allowed in terms of, or is there policy to that regard? And if there's policy, because we don't have to know how often. And then I see here in terms of the vacancies, there's nothing on content advisors. Have you perhaps abandoned content advisors folks? And what happened to those committees that do not have content advisors?
Thank you very much, ma'am. Honorable Tobas.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I have only one question on the filling of vacancies. Chair, the 60 positions, I'd like to understand the clarity on whether these posts have come about as a result of attrition or as a result of the revised HR structure. I raise this question because paragraph 1 of that on the same issue suggests or implies attrition. Yeah, paragraph 2 implies the identification of new posts altogether, which would mean some revision of but linked to that, Chairperson, are there any other line function, budget line items other than the spreading of posts that you have identified to arrest the deficit that seems to be running out? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to raise two issues. The first one is on the question of labor relations. In many institutions, this is one area that tends to in terms of management capacity. So what I want to know is what is the personnel management, total management component? And having said that, what are the actual what is that? the labor relations situation in Parliament has remained unstable for a long time. And that one is the specific sort of challenge. And we need to talk to him constantly as we move in the direction of seeking to address the issue. On the second question, I may be straying. I'm not sure if tomorrow's agenda will provide for the overall strategy of the institution. Never leave it.
Need answer? Honorable Mosabe? You're fine, thanks. Dear Reza?
Thank you. How many am I allowed? I mean, I think we must just understand because, you know, we've given the documentation, we've gone through it quite carefully. There's a whole lot of questions arising. So, I'm to cherry pick two.
It's fine. I was suggesting two so that we're equal, but if you've got another suggestion, you should put it on the table. It's really not my meeting, it's our meeting. You should be saying, I have 100 questions, how do I deal with them? Yeah, how do I deal with them? And members will decide. I'm just trying to be as fair as possible to everybody.
Well, I understand, but, and I understand the constraints.
Yeah.
You know, this is important work.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be constrained in my ability to exercise over time.
I agree.
Shall I start with three?
Yes, ma'am.
Will that be accepted?
That's my
great. Let's start then with the item 1.10 on the report by the Secretary of Parliament. And that's dealing with the process to condone the 1.22 million of irregular expenditure and the 14 of fruitless and wasted expenditure. Is the process that's outlined in the report of the Secretary of Parliament in line with any of the regulations that were issued by the executive authority in terms of section 65.1 of the FMPPLA? And if so, would the Secretary of Parliament be prepared to provide the copy of the regulation and point out the relevant legislation or regulation? If not, could he explain the legal basis for the process? It's not clear from the Secretary of Parliament's report who in fact condoned the irregular and wasted expenditure. Was it the committee? Was it the Secretary of Parliament, or was it the Executive Authority? Section 65.4A of the FMPPLA provides that the Executive Authority may approve a departure from the regulations or condone a failure to comply with the regulation, provided that the objectives of the Act itself are not then undermined. If it was the Executive Authority, Executive Parliament, that condoned the irregular fruitless and wasted expenditure, then the reasons for that decision must have been recorded in writing and submitted to the oversight mechanism in line with section 65.4b of the FMPPLA. If that is the case, can we have that documentation? Move next area item into 1.11, which is the composition terms of reference and time frame of the committee established to ensure that fruitless waste expenditure and irregular expenditure is resolved. The supply chain management regulations, which were gazetted on the 17th of March 2017 and which apply in terms of the FMPPLA to this Parliament, do not provide for a committee of this nature. Was this committee established in line with any regulations therefore issued by the Executive Authority in terms of section 65.1 of the FMPPLA? If so, could we have a copy of those regulations, and could you point out the relevant regulation that that committee was established? If not, could you please explain to us where that committee actually then derived the powers from? Only the Secretary of Parliament and not a has a duty to report particulars of any unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure or the likelihood of any such expenditure to the Executive Authority in terms of section 63 of the FMPPLA. And so I'd like to get some clarity on that. If I may, then my third question, and that deals with the items, further items that were dealt with in the response, and that's the contravention of the FMPPLA. I would suggest to the Secretary of Parliament that there's no such thing as a special adjudication committee. There's only one bid adjudication committee, BAC, established by the Supply Chain Management Regulations, which I referred to earlier, adopted in the 10th of March 2015 in government notice.
provides that a member of the committee is appointed by the accounting officer for a period of up to 2 years. The secretary of department, as the accounting officer, cannot appoint himself as a member of this committee. In terms of Regulation 79A4, that bid adjudication committee must ensure and declare in the report to the accounting officer whether the procurement process was competitive, fair, transparent, open, and whether it promoted responsible and accountable governance in the parliamentary service. The bid adjudication committee, in terms of Regulation 79A6, make a recommendation to the accounting officer to make the final award. The accounting officer may, in terms of Regulation 79C1, approve or reject the recommendations of the bid adjudication committee. Regulation 79C4 provides that the accounting officer must, where a decision that was disputed was made in terms of delegation authority, note all appeals against the decision or request for review of any part of the bid process, and then refer such appeal or review to a person senior to the decision taker for consideration and action. And I would suggest to you that it is impossible for the Secretary to Parliament to discharge the above legal duties if he's both a player as a member of the so-called special bid adjudication committee, which I posit is not legal in terms of the supply chain management regulations, and the referee then as the accounting officer. This arrangement, I believe, may well be unlawful and appears to be a breach of the supply chain management regulations as gazetted 17 March 2015. So, the suggestion that where the Secretary of Department is a participant in such a committee and serves as a final decision-making platform, therefore also appears to be unlawful. And so I'd like the Secretary of Department to please unpack and explain how he has navigated himself being on that special education committee, being a player in referee, and where that fits in with the supply chain management regulation gazette 17 March. I'll leave it there.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. No red card from the referee. I just want to go back to the danger pay, the principle of danger pay, because it's caused quite some concern if we have to read what the media has had to say about it amongst the other staff. And the principle that the Secretary espoused is that while they're exposed to danger and they have been interviewed, etc., I think that's a very dangerous principle to utilize. Because all of us in this parliament are vulnerable to danger. And we noted the other day when members of parliament, two committee chairs, were accosted in a meeting by a particular organization, and that's been investigated. And I think from experience, if anybody is vulnerable to danger, it's my leader and I, because we are seated in a position where the danger comes to us, you know, without us having to move. So I'm just a bit concerned about the principle and whether the whole issue of danger pay was part of the contracts that were signed between these employees and Parliament, and whether they're going to be paid retrospectively from the time they started. So that's on danger pay. Then the second broad issue, Chair, relates to disciplinary cases. Now, I know the Secretary did say that some of them take long, but I'm striking up how many disciplinary cases are outstanding, and are there staff who are being disciplined and are in employment at the moment that are being paid for not doing any work at all? And when are we hoping to finalize the disciplinary cases? And one comes to mind, I think it was, what was her name, the lady head of protection services. That was suspended. Zelda Holtzman, that was disciplined. Has that matter been finalized? And if it has, what are the terms of the settlement and how much did it cost us to engage in that matter as well? I think it's, yeah, Zelda. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Secretary, it is 5 past. Can we give you until 20 past? Try as far as possible to respond by 20 past, and we can decide how we take it further from this.
Thank you very much.
Chair. The question asked on the organogram. We have reported to this committee. It's been one of the meetings that, first and foremost, a macro structure of the organogram of Parliament was approved in the fourth Parliament, which is the structure that we used. And in the fifth Parliament, we are embarking on a project that we refer to as Back to Basics that then tries to deal with the microstructure. And the reason why we are doing that is to align on two issues. We align with the strategy of the first parliament, which has its specific nuances, and you make sure that the structure that is there is aligned appropriately. So on the organogram that we gave you the post, meaning the staff establishment. Now the staff establishment tells you posts, you know, that now you have to disaggregate that and say, well, which posts are occupied? Right? And you have to say which posts are vacant, and you have to then look at the posts that are frozen. And that then gives you a particular total picture. Now, when you have to give the details in terms of this on the budgeted amounts, you have now to count, where to use that word, the warm bodies, the people who are there, who are occupying that particular post. So we now tell you, okay, this is what we pay for this particular. Now, the project that we're engaging on the Back to Basics, which will basically do this alignment between the fifth parliament strategy and the organogram. Basically meaning that you have a lot of misalignments. One of those would be the ones that Member Waters has indicated in the organogram. So when we are done with that particular exercise, we should basically not be having structures within the institution that are not relevant. That's the reason why we have to do that particular exercise. And members of the committee would recall that is a project we have had from 2016-17, and we are now basically dealing with it now in 2017-18. Meaning, in the annual report for 2015-16, would have said an outstanding matter. In the annual report of 2016-17, we will have said, it's an outstanding matter that we have started with it in 2016-17. We are going to finish that project in the financial year 2017-18. So that deals with the question of the misalignment that the Honourable Member has pointed out to, which we are dealing with under the guidance of the executive authority with the secretary then responsible for the implementation thereof. So I think that would point to some of the discrepancies and the inefficiencies. The second issue on the suggestion made by Member Cook. Firstly, of course, we have the SEM rules. We do have the operating procedures that we engage administrative, but I think what I pick from the suggestion made, which is, I think is a very good suggestion, that we can make those, we can make practice notes that also are then available to chairpersons. I think it would help us a great deal when there is that common understanding from the chairpersons and the administration on how we then engage on procurement. I think we will take that suggestion, Honourable Co-Chair. The policy on how many times members are allowed to go abroad. The issue of members going abroad is part and parcel of a political management process, meaning the House chairs are responsible for committees, will work with the individual committees
on agreeing on their programs. And once they have agreed on the programs, which include the travel that those specific committees will undertake, and once it is agreed with the House chairs, who then have the further responsibilities, engaging with the executive authority and the various whips who are responsible for those areas. And once, and we have then, because we don't have unlimited resources, we have finite resources, the House chairs then help in terms of managing those resources and making the relevant political decisions on which committee will be prioritized and which committee may not necessarily get the chance to do its work at the time. So that largely is a political process that is managing that question. Then for other activities like the multilateral institutions, institutions and bilateral, that will be managed through the PGIR process, where that process will then advise the executive authority on matters that are bilateral in nature, and therefore which ones the institution must prioritize and respond to, and which ones it should forego. And it also then advise on that issue of which member participates in that process, because I think there are various members that are designated to each of these multilateral institutions. In terms of the content advisors, they are indeed part and parcel of the list of positions that have to be filled in this regard. Content advisors, you have researchers, and then you have ones that are related also to library on your other support mechanisms for committees. We are, I have asked the acting secretary to work with the relevant colleagues in this regard in order to make sure that those committees that don't have support in terms of researchers, content advisors, committee secretaries, they are attended to as speedily as possible in that regard. So the prioritization is at that level. Then on issues of the capacity that we have for labor relations, I mean, that I think that the whole issue around labor relations is related to the institution's strategy in this regard, which is currently undergoing its own review and assessment. The first part that we have done is that we have the fifth parliament strategy that we have put in place based on the strategic direction given by the presiding officer. The second part that we are working on, which will be an outcome or a product of the Brexit basics, would be to have a comprehensive HR strategy that articulates the various needs and direction for the organization. We don't have as yet that HR strategy. And then part and parcel of that strategy, it will rest on a number of pillars. We have a pillar that deals with learning and development, we have a pillar that deals with performance management, we have a pillar that deals with your labor relations aspect, and a pillar that will then deal with your, if I want to use the term, condition of employment, and I talk about that in a very broad sense. So at this point in time, in order to deal with this particular issue, we have given particular attention to the labor relations space. We have a manager and two junior officers who are looking at this particular area. We also are working on a revised strategy in that regard. We have engaged the services of the CCMA through its intervention measures in this regard that have worked with us and the union colleagues at that level. We have also engaged the services of labor experts who is going to help us to deal with the issues of coming up with a proper strategy at that level. So it's an important area. which must then respond to that. Now, the cumulative, I think the issues around labor relations will hinge also on a number of other strategies. If we successfully implement our strategy in its comprehensive sense, then it will have an impact on the environment itself, meaning we have to deal with issues of the organizational culture, which at this point, particular point in time, we don't have a culture that supports what the institution wants to achieve. We have to deal with leadership and management practices, which also have to be in line with that. We have to deal with the culture of performance and of service in that regard, which also you know, has varying degrees, which pose a number of challenges. Then we have to improve generally the environment within the institution, which we hope the change in the policy environment broadly should help us have an impact, an appropriate impact at that level. Then in terms of the question asked by Honorable CNAism, and I'll come to perhaps maybe the crux of the matter. The crux of the matter being whether the Secretary has acted as flare and rescue. And the simple answer is no. Right? The Secretary has not acted as flare and rescue in engaging on matters of SCM. What we had put in place and what we had to deal with was that when we were working on the rescue basics project, which we had to do for financial year 2015-16, the structures that we have established normally, which is your bid specification committee, bid evaluation committee, bid certification committee, could not produce the appropriate results, meaning they failed to deliver in that regard. And that you have as a report in the annual report, right? That says we have not delivered in that regard. We then took a decision that says, well, because we didn't have the capacity, I mean, those structures didn't have the capacity to deal with these issues, because we are having, if you like, middle management that had to deal with what is otherwise a huge strategic intervention. We put in place an additional, in re-establishing those structures, we put in place an additional consultant who had to assist the bid evaluation committee and the bid adjudication committee. And we changed the members of that evaluation committee and the adjudication committee, because the first one could not deliver. And the issues of non-delivery were capacity to deal with that issue. That process did not deliver, right? In spite of the fact that we had outside expertise in order to deal with this. Now, we were faced with a decision whether to abandon this issue, which basically means we are going to be having an organization that does not, a structure that does not support the strategy that you have. And of course, we looked at the regulations and studied them very carefully in terms of the various provisions that Honorable Stenhagen has noted. And those provisions, basically, they articulate a number of things. One, the powers of the Secretary to appoint members to the adjudication committee in that regard. And secondly, we have established a special bid adjudication committees before. Within the institution. So this is not the first special bid adjudication that we have established. And why do we establish a special bid adjudication committee? There are certain tenders that require specialized expertise, right? And this is normal in any organization. They require specialized attention, because the normal processes that are there cannot respond. And in our view, the rules and the regulations as they are, they don't preclude that. Now, we then looked at, when we established this particular structure, right? We then looked at, okay, what is the key lever there? The key lever there is that when the Secretary sat in this particular structure, he didn't have the bite of these issues twice. It means that committee where he serves in is the committee of last instance, right? It's a committee of last instance, and then what happens if you have a dispute? The regulations provide, if a dispute, you must engage the Auditor General, right? Who must then advise or we can engage an outside expert that can provide advice in that regard. And based on our understanding in this regard, we have complied with those provisions, and we have also then made sure that the institution was then able to bring on board people who are going to work on this back to basics project. And if we didn't have that, basically it simply means that you are not going to have this change and transformation that have the alignment that needs to happen. Now, Honorable Chair, I think in this regard, I mean, we have taken all the necessary precautions, all the necessary legal advice there is, and of course, legal advice, there are various interpretations to that, and there are various, and we are confident on the advice that we have taken, being the responsible officials in this regard. Now, on the question of on danger pay.
Set it out as a thing of last resort. Am I interpreting you correctly, Speaker? Secretary, you serve as a young No, he indicated he serves there, but it's the instance of last resort. Now, that's what he said. Whether we agree or disagree with him is a different matter. Yeah, that's what you said. Is that not so, sir?
That's indeed. And I provided the context within which that.
Can we get an indication, sorry for my ignorance, if I am ignorant, what would warrant a special, I think it was a special tender, this is the secretary about that, would warrant the establishment of a special adjudication committee for business? What type of tenders are we looking at that would warrant that?
That's right. Let me try and help, and if I don't say what you're saying, I'm going to talk generally. Well, I think what you are saying is that we have a bid adjudication committee that is looking at everything. But in certain instances, there might be a need for specialist skills or specialist knowledge. In those instances where we need specialist skills like architects, I'm using that as an example, we would not have architects within that bid committee. We would then have to go and get a special. And I'm saying this because when I serve in Scopa, we ask that question all the time. And the Auditor General would say to us, we would need to bring in people because I'm hoping I'm answering. I'm just hoping that so that we can move on. But I want to, when you're done, I'll try and summarize so that some of these things that are hanging, we must find a way of tightening them up ourselves. But it's a very useful exercise. You've got, let me just remind you, you've got danger pay, you've got DC outstanding, and you skip Gavaza's questions around the 60 vacant posts. Was it attrition or is it budget constraints? And is there any other line item that you've identified in terms of restricting? So it's those four, and we'll try and summarize all these. So I'm trying to make a note of those that I think we must discuss as committee. So you've got four left, sir.
Thank you very much. Apologies to the issue of the 6 people, it's because of accession, right? They've had people leave and we fill in. Not new posts that we have created or established. From 2015-16, we have not created new posts. Instead, we have frozen posts from the establishment. Are there other line items? Yes, indeed. I think we indicated that on our cost-cutting measures, we identified quite a number of line items that we needed to impact upon. Printing was one of them, travel, another, flowers, catering, because we have said there are various areas where you will have some inefficiencies. So we looked at all of those areas and said, how best can we look at this? Of course, when we engaged with traders, one of the things they've raised with us, which in fact what we are doing is not as a result of that, but that's one of the issues they've raised, is because traders would look at possible questions of inefficiencies within the system, in your economic classification, your employees, compensation of employees, in your goods and services space, in your capital expenditure space. We don't have a lot on capital expenditure. We have a lot on compensation of employees and the goods and services. Capital expenditure would mainly be the public works which takes responsibility for that. So yes, indeed, we have looked at a whole lot of other areas to make sure that we improve on the efficiency. Part of the efficiency is we didn't concentrate only on the monetary part. We also are looking at the processes, because sometimes the processes can cost long using the people, and if you do a calculation on that, it would mean also you know, certain losses and other things. Then on the danger pay, I think the reasoning that we have provided is one related to the conditions within which the organization or an employer would put the employees. Of course, every employee may be exposed to danger, but if the nature of the job is such that there is some possible risks that are there, you have a responsibility to manage the risk. Is that part of the initial contract? No. It's not part of the initial contract. Is it going to be paid retrospectively? The answer is no. It's not going to be paid retrospectively. It's looking at this particular area, and it's an area that is new to Parliament and its administration, because we have not really focused on that. We are focused on other areas as the administration. So we are learning also as we move along on what are the things that we could do to improve in that space. On the question of the disciplinary hearing, we have said this one, this is the only one that is there around your effect, the suspension, to be more precise. Indeed, as I've indicated, parties are engaging in that space. There are lawyers that have been appointed to deal with this matter. There's an independent chairperson that looks at this matter. I also know that the parties are engaging in negotiations to see if they can settle this matter as quickly as possible. And I think I can safely say that both parties want that to happen. But you have to have some kind of an agreeable position, which we have not arrived at that point.
Yeah, I was going to get to them. I'd identified them.
Yes.
So right there, I'd identified them. The issue around, and I guess it's a policy matter. The whole condonement, and I was going to raise that one.
Okay.
So there was a question about how do we condone, and I thought it was a financial one that I would ask after, so if you can answer it. This committee that condones, where does it come from, and what does it do? And so the whole process, what is the process of condonement? Is it you, or is it Speaker, or what is the process? And the second one, this committee that you've set up according to your notes, the special committee that's looking at it, what exactly is the terms of reference of that committee? I think those were the questions, because I was going to raise the same thing, but from a financial point of view. But maybe you should answer those questions. How do you go about condoning? You're talking here about irregular expenditure of 13 million rand, and if I understood from the notes, you've only condoned 1.8 million rand. So that's, I mean, 15.5. Oh, cumulatively, you've condoned 1.8. So it's not about the rent and cents that you've condoned. How do you go about doing it? And how long is it going to take you? Because you've done 1.8 of 13. Around the footless, there's 830,000 rand, if I'm reading your notes correctly. And of that 813, you've only condoned 14. So the question is, why are you condoning so slow? And what are the terms of reference of condoning? So it's that whole issue around the condonement. If you can answer those questions, you'd have finalized all of them. But I had noted them for our suggestions going forward. So if you could answer those. I'm hoping those are the two that you were going to raise as having been left out.
Yes, I think you're spot on the money there. But who was it that condoned it? Was it the committee? Was it the secretary? Or was it the executive authority. For the executive authority, there must have been a record of that, because we have copies of that document.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Section 4.4 of the regulation indicates that the accounting officer may establish other committees in order to ensure that you have effective processing of bills, quotation, and other SCS processes. And I want to come a little bit back on the process of condonation. You would recall that we tabled the annual report, the annual financial statement, in this particular wherein the issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure arose. And the question to the committee, from the committee, was, what is the process that you're going to follow in order to deal with this? And that process, we had indicated that first, we're going to establish a structure that is going to look at the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because you need to ensure some process of accountability. And that process, that structure, be independent and is established accordingly in terms of an appropriate policy. Now, that structure then makes recommendations to the secretary. The secretary then reports to the executive authority, right? And the executive authority, in the appropriate process and documentation, also makes the reports to this. So that is the full chain around it. Now, our understanding of the question that arose here was that secretary will ask you, when you presented the annual report, how are you going to deal with it? You made specific at the time undertakings that you are going to establish a committee, you are going to deal with the issue of condonation of these particular events, and you are going to make sure that these events are properly regularized in that process. And indeed, required in terms of what you call it, the act and the regulation, those tables, those documents, once the relevant authorities have dealt with them accordingly, will, as expected in terms of the act, be stable. What I would ask from the committee is to allow the full processes to then happen, get concluded, they get tabled here, because there are responsibilities around tabling of both your financial and your non-financial aspects of it. And what we are reporting here is that that process that we are giving you has gone up to this particular level.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying about you want to have the process, or you want to have a get to a point where you can table it here, and I think that's proper. The difficulty that I think we have, and I'm sure this is what CNN is going to say, your document says you have already condoned certain amounts, and we've not have sight of the process. I think whether it's 1 rand or 1 million rand, it doesn't matter. Because what you're saying to us now, please be patient, committee. We will bring it when we are ready. And I think that's proper, after it's been signed off by speaker or whoever. But then you must not put in your report that of the 15.5, you have already condoned so much. And I think that's the question. You in fact are saying an amount of 14K, and I'm talking, this is fruitless and wasteful, amount of 14K has been condoned. You say 2015-16 is 2K, and 2014-15 is 12K. So I think it's, you can't ask on the one hand for us to be patient, but on the other hand, you finalize it. It must be one of, you either do everything and it comes to us and we say we are happy, or you do nothing until we say you're happy. I think that's the point that we're making. We don't have to have a debate about it. And again, we'll raise these things, honorable members, that these gaps that we see, we will raise, because ours is to see these gaps and then assist the committee. But all I'm saying to you, Secretary, is that of the documents that you're giving us, you are saying you've already condoned, and I think that's what raised the flags with members, but on what basis did you condone, or the process that you condoned? But we take your point. I don't think we're going to engage it further. There's just two things that I also wanted to raise, and I'll hand over to you, Chair, to carry on. You know, when you were talking to the points raised by, I think it was Walter, you say that you had a structure for the previous parliament, and you started realigning for this parliament, and that you're going to finish in 1718. Well, it's too late for us, because our term ends in 1718, in terms of aligning the support for parliament, because this is parliament, not you. This is parliament. But if you're going to do that support and only finalize it, or not finalize it, align it by 1718, I think the question that will be raised by members is that it's going to be too late. Coleman asked the question about content advisors. To get a content advisor in 2018, Coleman is not going to be here, so he'll be on election campaigning. So I think those are the points that we should be raising full time. So I just thought I must make these points to you, sir. And again, I get back to the point that I said earlier on, and Honorable Stiernays, and it's not an affront, I don't know what the English word against you, but I think you've shown the fault lines that you helped us. Because many of us don't have the policies. And that's why I said earlier on, if we have the policies, we speak on the same time. It's not your fault. That's what I'm saying. It points to us. But we shouldn't do research for these things. We should be able to say to them, give us the HR policy. Otherwise, how do we do oversight? Now, Stan Hazen might have resources. I might have resources as chair. But I could tell you that seeing that the one man might not have the resources. So can we, and I thought we must have this discussion at some point, there has to be 5 or 6 priority policies. And we must then find a way of saying, how do we all move on the equal footing on those policies? I was just thought of raising those points from my side of it. Chair, I'm going to hand over to you. And I have noted there were a few members that still wanted to speak. You'll carry on. Okay. Can we have everybody have one last round? It's 22 honorable members. So we'll just start here. If you covered and you have nothing, we'll start at the back. So if you have anything, we'll go this way. And in your questions or comments, honorable members, please suggest solutions, that we don't become a whinging committee, but we are a committee that will be able to provide leadership to this institution, because it's our institution. If there's anything about that, then we'll come to September and we'll go all this way around. Just one question, honorable members. You covered, sir. Thank you. Honorable September.
I beg your indulgence in what I'm going to ask. If the Secretary can just clarify on the danger phase, if you say it's something that is still, I didn't quite get it, what you were saying there. Is still something in the making, or depending on the quick answer, I wanted to.
Put it to you as members want to say. We read in the newspaper on Sunday. The question is that speculation or is that a reality? That we read in the City Press or Sunday Times or one of those papers. I think that's the real nub of the question. No, I'm not saying that's the question, but I'm saying if you answer that question, then she will be able to ask her question on danger. Because I don't want us to be talking about speculation if it's not even there. You ready? Answer that one and then she'll ask her question.
Yes, indeed, it's finalized and it's been implemented.
Okay.
It's
very broad. No, thank you. If it's finalized, again, I didn't hear finalized on the basis of what policy, finalized on the basis of, because there are, I mean, 3 different streams outside of a policy which the law allows this to happen. So that's really what I wanted to find out. I don't see anything out of the extraordinary in this matter, because there's three different laws that allow Parliament to do this also, and I wanted to find out on what basis, in which category have you found the law? Maybe just a question to the question.
Not going to answer whether it's been unlawful, because of course he's not going to incriminate himself. I think the first part is irrelevant. Is there a policy and has it been signed off? On the basis of whether there's a policy or not, we will make that determination. And that's why I was asking that we should get all these policies. The question then, Secretary, is do we have a policy? Has it been signed off, or where are we in terms of that policy? Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Very quickly, even if one can justify danger pay in whatever way, we are here for 6 months of the year, give or take, given the recesses, etc., etc. Are these individuals going to be paid for 12 months of the year when they're looking at flies and everything else whilst we are not here? That's one. We don't have that. my second question is, I just want to know if there are 7 members attached to committee section that are still undergoing disciplinary proceedings, yes or no?
The other mechanisms, income generating mechanisms that are in place, would they include also the shop that sells paraphernalia? The last one that I had was just to find out in terms of your performance management, the model that you use. I take it because I didn't discuss or we didn't discuss it earlier on. There's a situation where as committees we work with secretaries, we work with researchers, content advisors, we work with the college assistants, but we don't have a say in their performance. I'm not sure whether the tool also or the model also accommodates such, or if it's going to be done during the review process.
All right. My one, because I'm also entitled to one other than the others, I think I'm surprised members didn't raise it. And if I'm misreading it, help me. Somewhere in your document you spoke about staff deaths of 19 million, and I think 16 million of that 19 million, I think, related to the Nehau matter. If I'm correct, then it means there's about a 3 million rand staff debts out there. Can you just talk to us about staff debts? What is the situation around staff debts? I mean, this is something that we've fought with in departments. We'll fight with you about that. MPs don't get loans. Don't even get increased. If you're having a 19 million rand staff debt, then there's something wrong about where the power lies in Parliament. So just around staff debts, if at all. If there are no staff debts, then we are happy. If there are, just talk to us briefly about those staff debts. And then I will hand over. I'm not sure if you have a question, Chair, but I'm handing over to you because this is the last one.
Thank you very much, Co-Chairs and honorable members. The alignment happening a little bit late. Indeed, honorable co-chairs and honorable members, that would be problematic entirely for it to happen at this point in time, because it would have been proper if we're able to do the necessary alignments during the financial year 2015-2016. As planned. But for reasons that one can broadly refer to them as capacity constraints in our own processes, and we are not able to do that, particularly in the supply chain management area, that was not able to deliver. A particular service provider that would assist us to do that. So we're moving in this area as fast as we can in order to make sure that we catch up and we make sure that we have the necessary realignments done. On the questions of danger pay, because it's quite a number of them, we benchmark the danger pay, of course, with what the public service is also putting forward. It's not paid throughout the year, it's done when we're in session. In terms of the policy process that we embarked upon, it was approved and authorized by the creative authority in this regard. Something that, based of course on our motivation, is something that we need for the institution going forward for reasons that have already been advanced. In terms of the disciplinary processes that have been indicated, indeed you still have the seven that are still undergoing discipline, and that process is not completed. It has gone through various stages because of the representations that have been made by all parties. The last that I know is that that process is now going to the CCMA that will assist in finalizing the matter. In terms of providing copies of policies, I think we'll take the suggestion, provide copies of the policies that are there that have been approved, and those that are not there, like the comments, the reviewed ones, are not there, so I'll only give you the revised, approved documents in this regard. On the performance agreement, the learning and development, we have the old ones that are there with the challenges that have been indicated. In terms of the mechanisms of getting additional income, we're looking at a wide variety of issues. One of the things that we are trying to improve is our management of the catering services, as it were, to professionalize them, to deal with the wastage that may be there, to deal with the management of inventory, the sales, and all of that. And bring it to the appropriate level, and bring the food that, for lack of better word now, customers of that particular, those canteens have, because we there are quite a number of people who still eat outside of Parliament, so we want people to eat within Parliament, so that's one of them. The second one is, of course, the gift shop that we're looking at, making sure that it's at an appropriate level and it can generate the necessary income. In that regard, we are looking at other measures that would be related to in the space of communication, broadcasting, and so forth. So we're exploring quite a number of areas. We have asked basically colleagues to look at what other measures can we have around income generating, which we think can then help us. So as right now there are no as yet approved areas in that regard, because we're still undergoing various processes in dealing with that. The model that we're using of performance management, if I'm correct, Member Coleman, the question we are raising is around using the 360 degree system of evaluation. We are not using that at this point based on the current policy environment. And indeed, going forward, that's what we want. We are employing different tools of basically getting feedback from the people we serve. One of the tools that we are using, which we'll be putting in place throughout, is to do what you refer to as feedback that you'll get from chairpersons, or feedback that you'll get from members. Right? On members, we have various categories. Individual members who are getting a service, us, we have chairpersons who are getting a service from us, and so forth. And you'll be getting soliciting feedback, which will be telling us, well, this is the level of service that I'm getting from the institution, good, not good, and so forth, allowing us then to. That information you will then use also then when you do the assessment around that. And of course, when you're applying it at your performance evaluation perspective, it would make sense as an improvement to then get the perspective and the view of the person that is receiving the service in that regard. Although right now, as I say, that particular avenue is not there. But I think the suggestion is in line with the direction within which we are moving. And we are quite right that the policy environment that we're putting forward may cater for that. Then, with respect to staff debt, I think, yes, part of the staff debt that is there, if you recall, Honorable Co-Chair, excuse me, and Honorable Members, this was an issue that was related to the May no work, no pay, which is a subject of discussion, as I had reported to this meeting, which we are hoping to finalize as soon as possible. From our side, we are looking at basically this particular area being resolved amicably in a manner that basically ensures that we're in line with the acceptable accounting practices in this regard. So it's part and parcel of the basket of issues that are in that collective bargaining. I hope I have not left
it. You have. You have, unless I again was falling asleep when you're talking. The ERP, I think Honorable Senator was saying, is it obsolete? Is it going to be obsolete in 3 years' time or in 5 years' time? And what about the activities happening in Treasury?
What we had reported, and I think it's better when we say what we had reported, is that the ERP that we bought, we bought 10 years ago. Now, when you buy that system gets customized. Your system. Now, the system that we have now does not match our needs and our requirements. And it's not the latest system, as it were. I reported to this committee that, for instance, one of the things that would be assumed is that I, the accounting officer, I have access to the budget of Parliament online. And sadly so, I don't, in spite of us having a system called Oracle. I'm sure that if you know, the procurement process will be done and we have Oracle, SAP, or any other competitor out there, it would be very different from what we have now. The system that we have now is really obsolete. It's not suited. In fact, I call it that APEC or access that you buy at the CNA is far better than what we have. Right? What we have now is not good, and I'm saying that because I have been involved in implementing ERP systems before when I was accounting officer. So I'm not talking from a theory perspective. I know exactly what I'm referring to. If you ask any of these colleagues whether they have easy access to the budget on a day-to-day basis, on real time, the answer is no. Right? And that situation is untenable. And that situation has got to be turned around. Now, on the part of the administration, we can't be pursuing whether we have Oracle staff and so forth. We don't want to engage in that. What we're saying is that the tool that we have does not suit our operating model, does not suit any modern style of management. And in fact, for me, I would dare to say properly that if you give me, you know, ACPEC or any other, it does, it's not so complicated as this other one or better as this other one, but it will do a better job. If we have to produce the document that you receive here, the CFO has to download those documents, transport them from that system that we have now, put them on Excel spreadsheets, do them accordingly, make sure that the figures that are there are consistent and so forth. Otherwise, you would not be able to receive the report that we have. In fact, if I were to put it differently, look at the initial reports that we used to take on, right? You will see that those reports are written in such a manner that you will not make heads or tails around that, because originally they come from the data. So that is the point that we're making. And on our side, we have said we have done the assessment around that. We are looking at updating and upgrading to that level, so that we have a system that meets our business environment. Now, if the argument is, if I were to do an analogy, of course, a car that you bought 10 years ago is still a car in transit, you know, and can take you from A to B. But it would not have certain functionalities of today. That is the simplest way of putting it. It would not have certain functionalities of today. The functionalities of today is that if you have to use a cell phone, even on a 1.3 car, you can connect your phone without putting that cell phone tag. 10 years ago, you would have to buy a cell phone tag. 10 years ago, you would have to buy a navigation system. Today, you can use the navigation system from your phone. That's what we mean by the system not being consistent. Now, whether you then need to buy a new system or you can use the old, that's something that we can, but the point really that we're making is that you want parliament administration that is at the high level, that is able to give you the right information, because honorable members and honorable chairperson, if a chairperson asks us how much money do I have on my computer, you can't give that answer. I have to say, well, hang on, phone the CFO, CFO, how much money do we have for this? Now, that is not really the right way of operating. So I think that's the point, really, Chairperson Maneki. I know I've gone a little, but I did so that we are then very keen around this issue.
Okay. On arising on the response.
Yes, arising on the response, but it wasn't my original question.
Okay.
The original question was that when the Secretary of Parliament appeared before the committee in November 2016, indicated that one of the main reasons they wanted to move away from the system was there was no longer going to be support. My information is that not the case. I've got no problem with us investigating other systems and wanting to get support rather than have a false bargain. That's no problem. We'll have that debate. But we must do it on the right parameters and for the right reasons. We mustn't come to committee. And I'm happy to call the hands on it, but I mean, I've got the audio recording from Kim G. I heard exactly what the I have to play back for an hour, if you want, because I've got another computer. We mustn't do it on the wrong basis, do it on factual basis. So I'm looking forward to this report, and I'm going to be watching this particular procurement like a hawk. I'm just letting the Secretary know that.
Okay, Honourable Singh?
Yeah, Chair, there was just one outstanding there, just to confirm or not whether there are seven members attached to committee section that are. You did answer that. Oh, sorry, I didn't hear. Maybe I was communicating with ancestors at that time. What was the answer?
Yes,
the one that's referred to is not the only one. Thank you.
One person.
Okay. No, thanks very much. I think members just indicate there's a documentation on quality, a set of quality documents that has been situated. Supply chain regulations, performance management, learning and development. There are some of the policies that have been situated now, so we check because they'll be useful even for tomorrow.
Chair, with respect to this
Email.
Memo dated 25 January meeting with delegations, authorities, and the CFO's executive. Can be crucial to our business going forward. I recommend that circulate to members.
Well, policies that have been raised here, some have been situated, some issues have been raised in a meeting, as well as the issue that may be raised tomorrow in a meeting with the presiding officer, suggestions, and the committee will decide how we deal with those issues in the course of this work. I think know that the issue that we suggest is that so also, the secretary and the team has also identified those policies. Maybe it may be necessary that we identify those policies that require agent review that will improve the operations, I think, of the institution. But most important, the issue was highlighted of the fact that it's called a comprehensive review of HR strategy and the key pillars that the strategy will be on. So I'm simply saying some of these issues have been been flagged, and there are issues that will be progress, will be provided, I think, in the committee moving forward. And if there are any issues, Secretary, that you feel that you want to provide a written response to the committee, that you feel that adequate, may clarify members of the committee better, you welcome, I think, to do so. Members? Okay, honorable.
Okay, just a process matter, if I may. I have at least 7 questions to ask from the Secretary of Parliament's report that I can give you a chance to put to the what process will be used to detail on response to those 7
questions? You can table those questions to the chair.
A request that the document you referred to, can the secretary just make hard copies for us in the morning?
Which document?
The policies.
The policies.
Which
they
emailed us.
They've been emailed. I think administratively the secretary has been able to put them.
So we don't have to
deal with the documentation that is wired to the committee. Well, not the secretary of the committee. Thank you. Okay, I've said that the secretary is welcome to can provide any other information. So, members, I think tomorrow our program stands as is. We have, tomorrow we start at half past 8. Half past 8 we should be here. Same venue, and then we have got an outstanding matter on the minutes that we just need to dispose of and proceed as our program. So, honorable
chair, my apologies for tomorrow. Can I join you at about 9:20, 9:25?
You're welcome.
Parliamentary interview.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, Secretary, and the team. I think this has been comprehensive information provided today. The excellent basis for how committee change its operation. Thanks.
Your files, it's your responsibility to bring all the files to that you provided. There's information now.
Where will I find you?